grisly one.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey, hey, gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
8 minutes after the hour of 5, this is yours truly, again, taking you home on the drive home at 5. And once again, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com, we're joined by our colleague here at WABC, nationally syndicated, but this is his mothership connection from 9 to 1 each night. John Batchelor, boy, just last week we were talking about Larry Kudlow replacing Cohn as the economic advisor to our president, Donald Trump. And now another person you're well familiar with, John Bolton, replacing the outgoing General McMaster as the national security advisor. When you heard that that had taken place, what was your reaction?
I'm old enough to remember when Larry Kudlow and John Bolton were guests of mine routinely every week.
So yes.
My first reaction was, well, another one gone. But it's a great celebration. John Bolton is extremely well prepared for the work ahead of him. He's going to inherit crises that are probably not solvable but manageable. North Korea and Iran first up in May, if the president meets with Kim and the Kim regime, and the Iran deal to be continued or not. But in any event, we also have the challenge of Vladimir Putin. And John Bolton, as my generation, we're children of the first Cold War. So I'm certain Mr. Bolton doesn't have to spend any time prepping on what's gone wrong in the Kremlin. He knows. He's the right man for the job. I am very pleased for the president's choice, and I think we will see a clear and clearly stated foreign policy going forward.
But now, John Batchelor, let's look back at then-Citizen Trump and even on the campaign trail, where he railed against Bush 43's invasion of Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had. In fact, let's listen to the tape.
Obviously, the war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake, all right? It was a mistake. The war in Iraq, we spent $2 trillion, thousands of lives. We don't even have it. Iran is taking over Iraq with the second largest oil reserves in the world. Obviously, it was a mistake.
So
George Bush made a mistake. We can make mistakes, but that one was a beauty. We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East.
Now, at the time, John Bolton was one of those cheerleading the president, meaning Bush, 43, on in that invasion. How are they going to get along on issues where clearly, if you look at Bolton's past, he wanted to invade Syria, obviously he promoted the invasion of Iraq. That was at odds with then-Citizen Trump and Kennedy Trump. So how do they suddenly put those differences aside?
My understanding is you serve your president. And at the time that John Bolton was in the Bush administration, he was serving a very clear foreign policy, as stated by the president, the secretary of state, the vice president. And he did he worked exceedingly carefully on the tasks in front of him. But he was a subordinate. He continues to be a subordinate to the president. He is not he's not elected. The president is elected. And I listening to those remarks of Donald J. Trump, very shrewd. For a man who is castigated as not understanding foreign policy, I agreed with every remark that the president just made. Iraq was a mistake. We have now a mess on our hands that cannot be solved. However, John Bolton has the experience to know where the Bush administration went wrong, where the Obama administration went wrong, and what little can be done to correct it. Iran, by the way, is the way to correct it. Iran, not Baghdad. Tehran.
Okay, so McMaster is out. It's rumored that possibly Chief of Staff General Kelly will soon leave or be asked to leave. And we see that Mad Dog General Mattis at the Pentagon has oftentimes said things publicly that are in conflict with what the president has said. Do you anticipate that the guy who liked his generals, you know, and said, hey, I'm glad I'm surrounded by generals, may suddenly be going towards those who do not have military experience.
No, I don't anticipate that. I do not hear negative remarks about General now Mr. Mattis, nor do I hear negative remarks about General now Mr. Kelly. I don't hear those. They might be there, but, you know, people say things. I think that with Secretary Mattis, Chief of Staff Kelly, Secretary of State nominee Pompeo, and National Security Advisor designated John Bolton sitting in a room with the president, we have men who are experienced and have things to say to each other. I do not believe that was the case when those seats were taken by Mr. Tillerson, Mr. McMaster. I believe the administration was not going in one direction. I believe that will now, my information is that that will now be a better conversation when they're faced with crises. What's going to come at them is the enemy. That's what's coming. The enemy gets a vote here. They don't get to do everything. They have to manage crises. And the first up will be either the Iran deal or the Kim regime. I choose one.
Well, I'm going to choose appearing before a Mueller inquisition where his inquisitors are sitting in a room along with Mueller. And President Trump has said, again, I want to go in there. I want to be cross-examined. John, do you think this is just theater on his part? You know, because we oftentimes see these in criminal or civil trials where the person accused says, you know, I want to get on the witness stand and tell my story. And then at the last second, they just pull back. Or do you think the president would actually go into that beehive?
Yes, I do. I believe he'll go in there because he has no doubts that there is falsehood behind the allegations of collusion with the Russian regime in 2016. He has no doubts about that. I don't have any doubts about that. I've followed this story, as you have, Curtis, since the allegation was first thrown out there right after the election of November 2016. I also believe that the president is a master negotiator, and that might be what he's doing. Mueller has given us no reason to believe that the president is guilty of anything, any crime. We don't even know what Mueller's investigation is turning on. What crime is underneath all of this? Possibly they're going to try obstruction because the president said give Flynn a break. I don't believe the American people will accept that as adequate for disrupting the government of the United States. If the president sits down with Mueller, it'll be a good day for us, Curtis.
Can I assume that this Sunday at approximately 7 o'clock, you, John Batchelor, along with most of America, we'll be listening to the ticking clock of 60 Minutes and the introduction of what will be a very long segment with Stormy Daniels.
And no, I have no knowledge of this, and I'm not investigating.
And not even curious?
Not curious. I'm not. What I am curious about, Curtis,
yes,
is Murderer's Row coming to the Bronx next Thursday. Now,
yes,
that's something
Judge
to
and
get
Stanton,
excited
about.
Yes, that's something to get excited about.
And let's not forget Sanchez.
Yes, what we have here is a version of the Yankees that you and I will be disappointed. Each week they haven't hit 15 home runs.
Yes.
Each week. That's what I care about. Whatever's going to go on CBS on Sunday is foolish.
Well, I remember as a kid, 1961, it was Mantle and Maris.
Yes.
People were cheering Mickey Mantle, who they had booed when he played alongside Joe DiMaggio, because Joe DiMaggio was the hero. Suddenly, when DiMaggio retired, it was Mickey Mantle. And they booed Roger Maris. So Maris would go home run for home run with Mickey Mantle. Mantle would be cheered. Maris would be booed. Maris ended up hitting the 61 home runs that year.
So it's going to be Judge and Stanton?
Judge and Stanton. But I think Sanchez.
Back and forth?
Yeah, but look for Sanchez because he seems like he's honed himself. You know, like last year he was getting out of shape, wasn't totally focused, definitely not defensively. But this guy is as potent a home. Remember, he beat Stanton
right
in the home run hitting contest
right
of Major League Baseball.
No,
this year.
It's a marvel what they've put together, Curtis. I mean, just a marvel. If I was more confident in the pitching staff, I would relax, but I can't. So they're going to need a lot of offense. Do you think Stanton and Judge can both hit 60 home runs?
I think they can.
Yeah.
I think they can. And I think the reason they can is because Sanchez will be sandwiched in between, and a lot of the pitchers will pitch to both Judge and Stanton because they're going to end up not wanting necessarily to pitch to Sanchez.
For years, Curtis, you bled pinstripes.
Yes.
No bleeding this year.
No bleeding. Cut my veins and arteries and I bleed pinstripes.
No bleeding this year. We're going to see them massacring the East.
This is 1961 all over again. And remember, that was after we lost to the Pirates in 60, in which we had outscored the Pittsburgh Pirates, but Mazeroski, the great Polish-American, hit that home run as Yogi Berra watched it go over the ivy-covered fence at the old Forbes Field, and that was it.
These are things I've only read about, Curtis. You know them intimately. However, you see what we really care about. We put up with this Washington nonsense all winter, waiting for opening day.
Yes. Well, the one thing is, if you notice in sports, this is the time of year when Barack Obama's tweets were being paid attention to because he had his brackets for the Super 16. Man, I'm telling you, it's the only Sweet 16, the only time he could ever compete with President Donald Trump when it comes to tweet watching.
Curtis, I'm going to press you here about the Yankee rotation.
Yes.
Is Severino ready to be the stopper? Because they lack a stopper in the four-man rotation.
Yeah, I mean, any minute, let's face it, you have Tanaka who could fall apart.
Right.
And obviously,
Sonny Gray.
Sonny Gray, who, to me, never really proved his worth.
Well, they count on offense to win. And we've got an offense. But is Severino the theory in baseball is every 4 days you need somebody to stop a slide. Is Severino the man?
No.
Then they lack one.
I think C.C. Sabathia, Mr. Captain Crunch, because remember, he eats Captain Crunch for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, is your stopper there in the Yankee rotation.
There's some ferocious competition in the American League. The Cleveland Indians are out for scalps. They want revenge from their disappointment last year.
Absolutely.
And they've got a brutal lineup and a great pitching staff.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest to management here that we do a show in which it's Batchelor and Sliwa, the Super Sports Baseball Spectacular.
No. I only know these things in reflection of you, Curtis. I remember I grew up in Philadelphia. And after the Phillies broke my heart at 64, I switched to the Red Sox because that's all we had. I was in Philadelphia in the 60s.
Yes.
You didn't get the Yankees.
Johnny Callison, what a great arm in right field. What a great bat.
You remember that?
I remember that. The guy could gun you out from the furthest point in right field at the plate without even a bounce throw. The guy had a gun.
All that season, they were the miracle team.
They were doing it
with Mears until the last 10 days. And I've never been able to follow the Phillies ever after.
John Batchelor, you can listen to him every night, 9 to 1, right here at his mothership connection to the many syndicated stations that he's heard around the nation in. But I'm suggesting the Batchelor Sliwa, Super Sports Baseball Spectacular, right here at WABC.
The Drive at 5. On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa, live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa.
Local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
She blinded me. So imagine, as we continue here on the Drive Home at 5, as a result of an experiment that goes awry, you're a teacher, and there are kids who are set on fire. And then all of a sudden, you get a promotion and you get more salary to boot. On the line to discuss it is Ben Chapman, educational reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Ben.
Hello, thanks for having me. And that's a great introduction music you had there.
Oh, yeah. Now, explain to me, who is this teacher? Is he part of the public school system? And how did he get a promotion and more pay for burning kids?
Yeah, this is Beacon High School teacher Anna Poole, who in 2014 was conducting a so-called rainbow experiment, which is a demonstration where you light different chemicals on fire and to show the different colors when they burn. And basically what happened was she opened up a bottle of methanol alcohol, and it basically exploded and burned one kid horrifically, melting his ear off and burning the forearms and hair of a second kid, triggering $37 million plus in ongoing lawsuits against the city. So Poole was reassigned away from the kids for a year and sort of placed in a rubber room doing administrative tasks. And then, she ended up at Education Department headquarters leading professional development sessions for teachers, teaching them how to give science classes.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding. It's kind of a head-scratching situation.
Well, it almost fits because, you know, you have the Department of Education. I say the acronym actually stands at times for dumbest organization ever. I mean, there was no one in the chain of command who said, why are we having this person teach our other teachers how to teach kids when, in fact, they're responsible for us paying out millions and millions of dollars in lawsuits?
You know, I asked them who made the decision and what were the factors in making that decision and why do they think that it was a good idea to have her doing this, and, you know, they didn't answer. So it is a head-scratcher. I don't really have any great theories for it. You know, there was one thing I was thinking that she could be going around, you know, sharing her experience as a cautionary tale, but I can't fathom it, frankly.
Well, now, Ben, let me flip the script on you. Let's take you to a public school cafeteria. According to Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president, he'd ban bologna and processed meats from being served to the kids. It's all free lunch now, but you couldn't serve them processed meats. Where did this come from?
Well, Eric Adams has been behind a push for healthier school meals for some months now, and this is a proposal for a resolution that the city council will issue calling on the education department to remove processed foods from public school cafeterias. And then it'll be up to the education department as to whether or not they're going to play ball with that. And I'm not sure where that'll go. The public schools actually used to serve a meat product called pink slime, which is an ammonia-treated meat that was even barred in Taco Bell and McDonald's until 2013. They stopped serving that stuff. So they have been working to try to serve healthier food, and it's possible that they'll get rid of processed food altogether. But
so, Ben, we grew up eating bologna sandwiches for lunch. So they're going to ban a bologna sandwich?
That's the proposal. That is the proposal.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a bologna sandwich, and then there's a bologna sandwich, you know. And there's a bologna sandwich every once in a while, and there's bologna sandwiches every day, you know.
And then there, as you know, Ben, there are bureaucrats and politicians who feed us the bologna every day.
Well, there is that, too. And it's also worth pointing out that in 2017, about half the city school cafeterias had health code violations. So this is sort of an ongoing sort of trouble spot in the city schools. Anybody who, spends any time in public school cafeterias knows that the food can leave something to be desired.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it, Ben Chapman. My two youngest sons, Carter, who's 9, and Hunter, who just turned 7, they go to a public school, and they will not eat the cafeteria food. They say, first off, the surroundings are unclean, unsanitary, and they'd rather bring in their brown bag lunch. Even though, remember, in New York City now, whether you're a rich kid, middle-class kid, lower-middle-class kid, poor kid, all lunches are free. Can you believe that? What a disgrazia.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
I'm and I'm cruising through Block Island Sound.
5:41. The restaurateur Sing out in Long Island is singing to a federal jury about a very dear Kumbadi teacher of his in the past, the former county executive Mangano, the Republican, his wife, and a Oyster Bay supervisor, Vendito. It's a corruption case where Sing has said, I bribed them. And he's also dragged the mayor of the city of New York into the process by saying, hey, by the way, I bribed him too. And Mangano has said to his lawyer, and how come De Blasio is not being charged like I am? On the line to discuss it, the former congressman from Long Island, John LeBoutelier. Thanks for joining us again here on The Drive Home at 5, John.
Hello, Curtis. It's always great to be on with you. And let me say that I, along with being a former congressman, I was the vice chairman of the board of Nassau Community College. And sitting on my right in the boardroom every month for a couple of years was Harendra Singh, the main witness against all three of these guys, against Mangano, the Nassau County executive, John Venditto, Oyster Bay supervisor, and they're on this federal trial that we're talking about, but also, apparently, de Blasio, who Mangano's right. Why isn't de Blasio being charged is not, no defense for Mangano, but it's a question you and I ought to be asking. Why the hell isn't he being charged?
Okay, well, we know about Mangano and we know about de Blasio, but tell us a little bit about what you knew about Singh before he came to our attention.
He is a restaurateur with restaurants in Suffolk and Nassau and Queens. I think he inherited these restaurants from his father. I heard that. As I said, they put him on the board of Nassau Community College at a crucial time. He was politically connected with both the Republicans and the Democrats in Nassau. And I forget who appointed him. Somehow he had a relationship, I think, with Tom Suozzi, I think, but I'm not sure. They put him on the board to vote in a certain way, which is against the way I wanted him to vote. He was lazy. He didn't do his work. He just showed up for one thing, was to do this vote. I would say he's a completely corrupted individual. But what he did with Mangano and Venditto, they're the idiots, by the way. I mean, you're the elected supervisor of the town of Oyster Bay, which means I think you have a car and a driver and all that. And he offers a limo for Venditto to be driven around in, paid for by Singh, and Venditto takes it. You've got to be crazy, Curtis, that when you're an elected official, basically you can't accept anything. You've just got to say no.
Well, you know, it's interesting, John Leboutelier, apparently Singh in his testimony before that federal jury out in Long Island said, the reason I was able to cater so much support from these elected officials, in this case the Republicans, is because I'd constantly give them free food. I'd feed them. And they just kept coming back for more and more of my free food. And from there, I just started whining, dining, and pocket lining.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Now, most elected officials, I know the public doesn't want to hear this, most people in politics have no money. They're not Trump. They're not Mike Bloomberg. Most people who are congressmen, councilmen, all, they have no money. They need the salary that they're getting as an elected official. They're easily corruptible with soft corruption, like free dinners and all that, and then they're hooked. And then other things can, if they're weak, come upon them. Then you get people like Peter King. You know, Peter King has no money. He's been a congressman for 30 years or whatever. You couldn't corrupt that guy for all the money in the world. He's not going to allow it to happen because he's got a good character. But if you're weak, it's easy to be corrupted.
So you mean to tell me, John Leboutelier, if I'm sitting at an Irish bar with Peter King and I'm knocking back Irish car bombs, that if I offer to pay for Peter King's drinks, he's so honest, he would say, no, I got it.
Correct. He would.
I got the Jameson.
He would not allow you to buy. And there's a limit. I forget what it is, $50. I don't know. But he would stick with the rules. Peter's a sharp guy. A lot of these congressmen, by the way, in both parties, are not going to break the rules. They're going to be straight about it.
All right. Well, explain this, because Singh, in testifying against de Blasio, who is not on trial, is not in that courtroom in Nassau County, said, hey, I not only bribed him, but when I told him what I would do to help his campaign, which is to basically collect checks from friends and workers and others that I knew, I would pay for the check out of my own pocket. So basically it was at no cost to them. So he was bundling, but that process is illegal, correct?
It is illegal, absolutely. Bundling is legal. If you go out and you've got Frank, Smith, George, and John to each give $1,000, whatever, and you bundle that up. But what you can't do is you can't give the $1,000 to John, Frank, Smith, and Bill. and then they reverse and write a check back. In other words, you're really giving the money through them. You can't do that. And what de Blasio did is illegal under the law, which is willful ignorance. He said to Singh, I don't want to know.
So basically, I'll take the money. I just don't want to know how you collected it and put it in my pocket.
Correct. And once he knew the scheme, and then he said, look, I don't want to know about it. He's guilty of willful ignorance.
And so why do you think he avoided prosecution by the U.S. Attorney's Office, Southern Attorney's Office, which for the most part was led by Preet Pereira at that point, and then also by Cyrus White Hughes Vance, Manhattan District Attorney?
No. Well, okay. So first of all, this trial that of Mangano and Venditto is out here in the Eastern District. They were indicted by a different prosecutor than covers Manhattan. That's the Southern District, as you mentioned, which was Preet Pereira, and he was investigating this. And remember, that it was in the news a lot that they finally had a meeting with de Blasio where he came and met Pereira's people, very high profile. And a few days later, they announced they weren't going to prosecute him.
So basically, John Le Boutelier, it may be the strategy that Trump has. I'll meet with Mueller and his inquisitors, and they'll let me just go scot-free.
Well, look, if you're innocent, you're not going to be prosecuted. Rarely do the feds lose these cases. I mean, they pretty well have it tied down. But Trump and Mueller is a different deal than horrendous thing in these people. It's tangible that they took these benefits. There's really very little doubt. I mean, besides the limo thing, Ed Mangano's wife got paid $400,000 to be a food taster. Are you kidding me? And vacations in the Caribbean. I mean, we've seen this dance before, and it always ends badly.
Do appreciate that, John Le Boutelier, former congressman. Talking about now what has been 40, count them, 40 people taken out in chains and shackles, indicted or investigated for political corruption on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans in Suffolk and Nassau County.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
You'll be the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Doing more than 30 days. It's David Sweat. You remember him, the Heckle and Jekyll, the two guys upstate in Plattsburgh who broke out of prison. And then remember Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Facha Peruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, went up there and acted like the head screw, like he was going to solve the breakout. And they were on the lam for days, remember? Well, his partner got killed, but David Sweat survived. And so he was shipped to Attica, and he was housed in segregation. But eventually, I guess he minded his P's and Q's, and he was able to have visits. And naturally, there are always these groupies, these women who decide that they want to hook up with infamous killers, infamous criminals. They know nothing about them, but they develop a relationship, first by writing letters, and then they're entitled to a visit. So the other day in Attica, here's David Sweat. He's getting a visit from his gal pal named Francis. And all of a sudden, the CEO, the correctional officer, says, hey, the guy is proving to us that he doesn't have erectile dysfunction. I mean, you could have climbed his ladder there. And then all of a sudden, his girlfriend, Francis, reaches over and she starts to, let's just say, massage his ladder. All of that is on view. So what does David Sweat say? He says, no, you got to understand. I had just drank 3.5 20-ounce iced teas. And like any guy, I had to go. But naturally, there was no bathroom, no little boys' room. So my girlfriend was only helping me because you know what it was like? It was busting at my seams. And you know something? His lawyer had the gall to go before the correctional department in Attica and use that as an excuse. Give him more than 30 days in the hole for that.